This is WA2XMN Alpine and WFDU Teaneck.
And now we bring to you a special radio dramatization of The Empire of the Air, starring David Ogden Steers, Steve Allen, John Astin, Harry Shearer, Edward Asner, Jane Meadows, Gary Owens, and Phil Proctor. Written and produced by David Osman of the Firesign Theater.
Hello, everybody. Kenneth Barkley, early in the morning on talk radio.
And good morning to you. You know our philosophy on talk radio is egg bot.
Everything's going to be okay.
There's a major signal in the 605 San Andreas freeway where a semi has dumped a load of concrete.
Rock and roll revolution. I'm talking revelation, baby. Here's my man with the voice that's choice. Just the oldest redhead and I'm sitting by the dock of the bay.
Now is Humpty Loki looking to the coast.
Well, cheerio.
What a night in Allen's Alley, Portland. I guess the I smell the yammer in the air. What not?
This is NBC, Columbia, presenting
Oh, joy.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
What?
The shadow knows.
White House, the subject of thinking bubble. Lindbergh waves to the crowd. The crowd waves back. Oh, this is the most terrific broadcast I ever took part in.
This is America before the radio. Once upon a time, America, 76 million people, 45 states, spread thinly across a continent linked by railroads and the telegraph. Copper wires strung pole to pole. We're in Yonkers, a small city with a swell view of the Hudson River. 45 minutes by train from the office blocks and tenements of New York City. Citizens here are amusing themselves with the latest fads from the Fat New Sears Roebuck catalog. Parlors are filled with music and wind-up Edison talking machines. That one's a big hit. Electric lights click on at sunset. And on a hot summer evening, you can plug in an electric fan for some relief. A few people in Yonkers, including a bright kid named Howard Armstrong, are beginning to tune into the sound of something more marvelous than the latest Edison cylinder and far more powerful than the gentle hum of electricity. Young Howard reads about it in books and magazines devoted to patient, heroic inventors who single-handedly changed the world. Dreaming, he can hear it spark and sing from the antennas of Heinrich Hertz. Leap forward in dots and dashes from Marconi's transmitters. Wireless communication. Oh, what a fantastic idea.
Emily.
Yes, Mother?
Please change the record, dear.
How would you do it?
I'm reading.
Emily?
I will.
And wind it up, please.
Father?
Yeah?
I was talking to Randy Runyon today about Marconi.
And what about him?
In this book you got me in England, it says Marconi was a beardless youth when he invented the wireless.
He must have been a very clever young man. Still is a young man.
Well, Randy thinks it would be good fun to try our luck with it.
Oh, dear. Oh, no, I don't know as I like the idea of you playing around with electricity.
Oh, it's safe enough. And I've got lots of room in the cupola for the equipment.
But that's the spare room, dear.
Randy's learning the Morse code, and I am, too.
Where's Meet Me in St. Louis?
It must be right there.
I looked.
Oh, you never seem to look for things where they are, Emily.
So what do you think, Father?
Well, you get started in high school, Howard. Let me see that you're doing well, and I'll help you buy what you need. Man here in the paper seems to have made a success out of it. DeForest Wireless secures Navy contract to build stations in Panama and Cuba. Awarded gold medal at World's Fair.
I wish we could go to the World's Fair. Meet me in St. Louis, Louis. Meet me at the fair.
Esteemed visitors to the grand and glorious St. Louis World's Fair in this centennial year of 1904, it is my honor Forest Wireless Telegraph Company, the grand prize gold medal for general excellence in wireless telegraphy.
Truly, wireless telegraphy is the greatest of wonders and the choicest of all callings. I urge all of you here in the DeForest Building to enjoy and learn from the exhibitions we have prepared for you.
Funny looking fella, any pal?
Kind of monkey-faced, I'd say.
Now, where's Sonny gone? I swear I can't keep my eyes on that boy.
Oh, he's looking at the war map over yonder.
Say, Pa, how about riding the fair's
I was thinking we should take in the poultry pavilion first, then we'd be in the air when the fireworks start.
Dr. DeForest? Excuse me, sir. Dr. DeForest?
How can I help you, young man?
Well, my name is O'Brien. I'm with the Kansas City Star. Can I ask you a few questions?
Well, Mr. O'Brien, if you'll walk along with me.
Certainly, sir. Well, how would you describe what you do, sir, being an inventor?
Oh, I commenced being an inventor at a very early age, Mr. O'Brien. At 13, I constructed a perpetual motion machine.
Really? Did it work?
Sir, I had not yet learned that invention is a process of constant disillusionment. And many a clever invention has been destroyed in a single blast by the discovery of new facts.
New facts. Very interesting, sir. I wonder if you could tell me something about the president of your company, Mr. Abraham White?
Without Abraham White, gifted financier and far-sighted man, the patient labor of many years would have come to little or naught. He has made even a small investment in the DeForest Company the greatest stock market purchase of the age.
Are you aware, sir, that this Mr. White's real name is Abraham Schwartz?
Surely a man is entitled to change the color of his name.
Sir, Mr. White has promised your stockholders a string of wireless stations from New York to San Francisco.
These things take time, Mr. We've built stations in New York City, Buffalo, Cleveland, Chicago, many other places. The U.S. Navy has ordered long-distance stations from the DeForest Company in Panama, Cuba, Puerto Rico.
Oh, yes, sir.
Dr.
But
DeForest.
Excuse me.
Oh.
Hello there.
Hello.
How do you do?
I just so enjoyed your exhibit, sir.
Oh, sir.
Fascinating.
Sir, your company began building a station in Atlanta. And Mr. White sold $50,000 worth of stock in that city. My information is that you have abandoned the project without sending so much as a single telegram.
Turn around, Mr. O'Brien. Take a look at the tower standing beside my building.
Yes.
Steel, 300 feet high. Tallest structure at the fair. My name is spelled out in electric light on that tower, visible from any vantage point. Do you see it, Mr. O'Brien?
Yes, I certainly do, sir.
DeForest. DeForest. Those letters symbolize the wireless just as EDISON signifies the phonograph. Here's something you can tell your readers, Mr. O'Brien. Dr. Lee DeForest has ordered a cot to be placed at the top of his tower. And from that vantage point, he will settle back to enjoy the cool night breezes and survey the magical scene 300 feet beneath. And Mr. O'Brien, he will fall asleep, secure that the company which bears his name is outdistancing any and all competitors in this or any other country in the world.
Let's go.
Have you got that, Mr. O'Brien?
Yes, sir. Just one more question.
Make it brief.
I'll try, sir. Sir, is it true, as he claims, that you stole the idea for your wireless detector from a Canadian experimenter named Reginald Fessenden?
Good day, sir.
He's suing you, is he not, Dr. DeForest? Sir, isn't it true that he's suing
you? This court, after weighing the testimony carefully, rules that the so-called spade detector currently employed by the American DeForest Company clearly infringes upon the Fessenden patent and hereby enjoins the DeForest Company any further use of this device. Further, this court rules that damages shall be assessed in favor of Mr. Fessenden, the amount to be determined later.
Send a wire to DeForest, Clarion Hotel, London. Lee, case decided in favor of Fessenden. Stop. White and other directors hold you personally responsible for having deceived them. Stop. Intend to organize new company and leave you holding the bag for damages. stop. We'll meet you at dock for a brief trip to Canada to await financial arrangements. Stop. Your loving brother, Charles.
This is the funeral of my firstborn child. That which I had wrought with pain and ceaseless endeavor to make grand and lasting and triumphant is prostituted, sandbagged, throttled, and disabled by the robber who has fattened off my brain.
Lee, I've been out to White's place.
Schwartz's place.
Whatever. He calls it White's Park. I've seen it. The house has silver doorknobs.
Robber.
Silver doorknobs, Lee, and you have nothing.
I have something.
Sure. $1,000 in severance pay.
$500. I have here a bill for the other $500 from my so-called attorney. No, Charles, there is something else. Schwartz and his cronies think it's worthless, but I know there's something to it. It's a glass valve, a sort of electric light bulb, and somehow it's the Edison effect. I call it the Audion, and I've taken out a patent on it. It detects wireless signals.
Randy, my answer to algebra problem 5 is X equals 44. What do you get for physics problem 1? 18 gallons per minute? How about tennis Saturday afternoon? I've been practicing my serve.
While DeForest jiggers with his Audion and Armstrong struggles with his physics homework, Davy Sarnoff, another youngster talented with the telegraph key, takes advantage of his first opportunity to talk with the great Signor Marconi himself.
I've read everything they've written about you, Signor Marconi.
Really?
The newspapers say only Signor Marconi has the vision to create instruments that no one else thinks are possible.
Newspapers say many things. It's good for circulation. Bottomley says you are learning the key, that you are good, in fact.
I want to be a wireless telegrapher.
Well, I suppose you can't stay an office boy at Marconi for your whole life. So, you've been in New York 6 years. You speak English better than I do.
Well, I was almost 10 when we sailed. My father left Ouslium for New York when I was 5 and took him 4 years to save the money to bring our family to America. My father had consumption, so my mother took in sewing, and I sold the Tageblatt, that's a Yiddish newspaper, in the afternoon, and I delivered copies of the Jewish Forward in the morning. On the Sabbath, I sang at the synagogue.
And in your spare time?
English classes, reading.
I am surprised you aren't working for a newspaper instead of for me.
Well, that was a mistake. I mean, I had a newsstand. A relative helped me buy it 2 years ago at 10th Avenue 46. My father and my little brothers all work there. And then my father died, so I thought, well, I know English. I have energy. Maybe it'd be a good job to be a reporter.
Ambitious.
So one Saturday morning, I put on my suit and tie, walked downtown to the Herald building to ask for a job. But by mistake, I walked past the newspaper offices and into the cable company. And the manager said, well, son, I don't know about the Herald, but I could sure use another messenger boy. $5 a week, and we provide the bicycle. Can you start on Monday? Then when I saw the telegraphers at work, I knew that was what I wanted to do. I bought a key and started to learn.
So you left commercial cable for Marconi then?
I was fired. I wanted to take 3 days off for the holidays so I could sing with my choir, and they wouldn't give it to me, and I protested. So they fired me. Mr. Bottomley offered me a job sweeping up, running errands, and so because it was for the Marconi Company, I took it. Also, pays $5.50 a week.
Davy, I believe I have some confidential work for you, for me personally. You know that I am not in New York City often, but when I am here, I like to see a few friends of mine. You understand, lady friends. Perhaps you would care to be my messenger to pick up flowers, little gifts, confidentially deliver them. Then we will see about you becoming a wireless operator. Yes, Davy? I think we will do well together, very, very well.
A few days after Davy Sarnoff and Signor Marconi have their conversation, a major event in the history of broadcasting takes place. The first broadcast. Reginald Fessenden, DeForest's Canadian nemesis, presents a program consisting of music and voices, not dots and dashes. It appears unexpectedly on Christmas night, 1906, in the earphones of a few radio amateurs and shipboard wireless operators.
Yes, sir, Captain. It was the darndest thing I ever heard. I could understand most every word. Fella named Reggie Fessenden come on. Said he's over to Brant Rock near Plymouth, Mass. Had a 500-watt Alexanderson dynamo. Wished us Merry Christmas. Then some lady sang. Right over the wireless like it was a Bell telephone. Some other fella read a poem. Couldn't hear much of that on account of a weather service message come through from Boston. Wind turned in southeast at 18 knots, the barometer steady. Then a violin played Old Holy Night. And this Fessenden come back, says it was him playing, and he hoped we enjoyed his Christmas program. He told us to write him at Rant Rock and tell him what we thought of it. I tell you, I was glued inside them headphones. Greatest thing I ever heard.
If Fessenden can do it, Lee DeForest can go him one better. From a lab on 14th Street in Manhattan, he begins transmitting programs anyone can hear. Anyone with a properly tuned receiver, that is.
You are hearing a DeForest radio telephone transmission. The patented DeForest Audion valve, manufactured to the strictest of specifications and available upon application to the DeForest Company, is essential to receiving these nightly broadcasts. I will continue by playing for you a recording of Enrico Caruso's magnificent Vesti la Giubba.
Meanwhile, up in Yonkers, Howard Armstrong has filled the spare room with wireless equipment and is learning everything he can about how it works and how he can make it work better. The summer after his freshman year at Columbia University's engineering school, he begins a construction project in the backyard.
I thought you were finished building any higher. Mrs. Trying to build a ladder to the moon.
Tell her sure. Me and Jules Verne are going to spend the rest of the summer up there.
Oh, Howard. I think I could explain that better than what you're really up to.
Tell her I like the fresh air better at 125 feet up.
They call him Army Armstrong at Columbia, and he commutes to campus on a bright red Indian motorcycle. He acquires a DeForest Audion and, with the help of the university's test equipment, probes its mysteries. DeForest himself, after seeing another of his companies go under from stock fraud, is reduced to selling off his equipment. He goes to work for Federal Telegraph in far-off California and continues to tinker with the Audion, hoping to produce a prize-winning telephone amplifier. The fact is, though, that neither DeForest nor anyone else has been able to explain exactly why his Audion works. Until the summer of 1912.
It oscillates. Oh. Oscillations in the grid circuit set up oscillations in the wing circuit. Now, if only I could feed the current from the plate back into the grid, that would amplify it 1,000%.
Inspector, it's going to be quite extraordinary.
Gentlemen, your attention, please. This evening, you will witness a most revolutionary wireless receiver developed by a young man while an undergraduate here at Columbia. I believe him to be a true genius. I have no doubt his name will soon become familiar to all of you American Marconi engineers and to the world. Edwin Howard Armstrong. Howard, Mr. Marriott, Mr. Templeton, and Mr. Sarnoff. Mr. Sarnoff is chief inspector.
Thank you for coming, gentlemen. Mr. Sarnoff, I believe I read your name in the newspapers not long ago.
Indeed you did, Mr. Armstrong. I was fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. Of course, the Titanic was a great tragedy.
I believe it had a salutary effect on wireless in general and the Marconi Company in particular.
The wireless saved hundreds of people's lives. No ships ought to be allowed to sail without it aboard. And I believe Marconi equipment will be the standard. Yes, Professor.
You heard the SOS signal yourself, Mr. Sarnoff?
Yes, I was sitting at my key in the Wanamaker building when it came through from the Carpathia. I stayed by that key for 3 long days, taking down survivors' names as they came over the wireless. Oh, it was unforgettable. Well, sir, perhaps this invention of yours will help us to avoid such disasters in the future.
Oh, yes, I believe it could be very helpful. For one thing, instead of bruising your ears with tight receivers, which you must do in order to hear with the standard Marconi Navy-type tuner, my system allows you to read signals clearly with telephone speakers placed on the table. Shall I demonstrate?
Mr. Armstrong, we are very anxious to hear what you have.
Memo from
Chief Inspector Dave Sarnoff to Signor Marconi. Subject, the Armstrong regenerative receiver. Following Mr. Armstrong's first dramatic demonstration in the lab at Columbia University, where we clearly heard signals from Labrador and Ireland, I spent the last 2 days of January with him at the Belmar, New Jersey transmitting station.
Need any help, Howard?
No, thanks, I've got it. It's just that my hands are so cold, the wires are hard to handle. There. Hand me the pliers, Dave.
Here you are.
Thank you. Okay, that does it. We're already tuned to Clifton, so...
Damn, Howard!
Oh, that's Ireland, all right.
Oh, this is a magic box for certain. See, what else you need?
Well, if we're gonna stay here all night, at least our insides can stay warm. Have some brandy, Dave?
No thanks.
Wait, listen to this.
Galvanized steel cloth. Arcload, FOB Portland. Institute, Lyric, Fundamental.
What is it? What does that mean?
Private codes, price quotes. John Roebling and Son, San Francisco. Oh, God. Howard, San Francisco.
The static's terrible. Lightning bad shall ground aerial wires. Wonder where that's coming from.
Can hear you. Honolulu. Honolulu. Oh, Howard, I don't believe it. You're bringing Hawaii.
Hawaii.
That is terrific. Terrific. Whoa, wait till Signor Marconi hears about this.
We listened to signals from Ireland, San Francisco, and Hawaii. Clearly amplified, audible even in the next room. I would state to you, Signor Marconi, that the results warrant our most careful investigation of Armstrong's patents and circuits. I am of the opinion that he has the most remarkable system in existence.
Mr. Davis, I'd like to take out a second patent.
Something new, Armstrong?
Well, sir, I just wanted to make absolutely sure about it before I put in an application.
A new circuit?
No, sir, it's the same device.
I told you 6 weeks ago to put down in black and white every single thing you knew about that circuit. What is it now?
Well, it generates. I've known about it nearly all year. It can generate a continuous wave right there inside the tube. It's not just an amplifier, Mr. Davis. It's a transmitter, too.
He said what?
He told them none of the methods of producing amplification have to do with the ionization of gases inside the audio.
Ugh.
Lee, the kid threw the gauntlet in your face, and he did it in front of the best electrical engineers in America.
Pipsqueak, it's intolerable. How dare he propose to say how my invention works?
And he said the plate oscillates.
The plate doesn't oscillate. I knew about noise generation in the Audion years ago. He's discovered nothing new.
He's got a patent on it, Lee. He's looking for buyers.
Buyers? Robbers? I've been robbed of everything I've ever had. I've had to scrape for money all my life. I was born to be robbed.
American Marconi licenses Armstrong's regeneration circuit. It brings the young engineer $500 a month in royalties. Shortly thereafter, DeForest retaliates.
Patent application for oscillating Audion, September 1915. Gentlemen, while the DeForest oscillating Audion does make use of a regeneration circuit, I would like to point out that this characteristic was discovered by me in 1912.
That's ridiculous. Who does DeForest think he is? He claims to have invented something 3 years before applying for a patent. 3 years? Nobody will believe him. How could anyone believe him?
That's how it starts. The fight that will consume most of the adult lives of these two men, locking them and the corporations that hold their patent rights in endless litigation. DeForest continues broadcasting. Radio enthusiasts as far as 200 miles away are tuning in their crystal sets to hear radio phone concerts made possible by the Columbia Graphophone Company. As for David Sarnoff, he has a startling yet practical vision, which he puts in a memo to his superior at Marconi, Chief Engineer E.J. Nally.
I have in mind a plan of development which would make radio a household utility in the same sense as the piano or phonograph. A receiver can be designed in the form of a simple radio music box, arranged for several different wavelengths which should be changeable with the pressing of a single button. This device can be supplied with amplifying tubes and a loudspeaking telephone, neatly mounted in one box. The box can be placed on a table in the parlor, the switch set accordingly, and the music received. The same principle can be extended to numerous other fields, for example, receiving lectures at home. Also, events of national importance can be simultaneously announced and received. If manufactured in quantities of 100,000, the radio could sell for perhaps $75 per outfit, yielding a handsome profit for the American Marconi Company.
Chief Engineer Nally leaves Sarnoff's memo unanswered. Marconi is otherwise occupied. There's a war on in Europe. Edwin Howard Armstrong, 26, joins the Signal Corps. His job is to solve as many of the problems plaguing Allied wireless communications as possible. He begins on the troop ship to France.
Oh, and wouldn't you know, the ship's wireless receiver was not equipped with Audions, but the operator happened to have one of his own aboard, so I borrowed some wire from the electrician and rigged up a regenerative circuit that brought in signals from all over the map. We got press from both sides of the Atlantic. I'll be laying over in London for a few days, and there's a fellow I want to see there, a Marconi engineer named Henry Joseph Round.
They said they couldn't be bothered.
I'll go you one better for backwardness at losing the war. Do you know what that bloody idiot Churchill said?
Churchill?
Winston, bloody First Lord of the Admiralty. Nothing ought to be trusted except direct visual signaling by searchlight flashes. How's that for 18th century thinking?
I worked for the Spanish Armada.
And that after my equipment detects a 7-mile shift in the position of the Hun fleet at a distance of 300 miles.
In the Battle of Jutland?
Correct, Lieutenant.
What interests me, Mr. Round, now that I'm over here, is this rumor of high-frequency signaling the Germans seem to be engaged in.
Much more than a rumor. Extremely tricky business. The Bosch have worked out a way of broadcasting somewhere between 500,000 and 3 million cycles. We jerry-built a receiver that can pick things up to about 1 million cycles, but we can't tune it worth a damn. I hope you'll give it a shot, Armstrong, old man. Might win the war, you know. Might just win the war.
Excuse me.
Yes? What is it, Sergeant?
I'm supposed to report to Captain Armstrong, sir. My name's Harry Howe.
Good God! You're a ghost.
No, sir, I'm not. I came right here from the hospital.
But the hospital told me you were dead.
Well, sir, I don't exactly remember what happened. I was feverish and the Yank medics had their hands full, I guess. Anyway, I woke up in a hospital full of froggies, felt okay, and decided I'd better get up and report in. Is Captain Armstrong here?
Yes, it's me. And I'm doubly glad to see you, Hawk, now that I know you're not a ghost.
No, sir.
Well, Sergeant, what do you know about radio? How about making a circuit drawing for me, say a receiver with a carborundum detector?
Yes, sir, I could do that, sir. But let me draw you something really new, Captain. They call it a regenerative circuit. And she's a humdinger. Fellow that came up with it, his name is Armstrong, too, like yours.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
That's me.
Who?
I'm Howard Armstrong. Look here, if you know about my circuit, we've got some work to do.
Yes, sir. What's the assignment?
Well, the Germans have come up with some sort of ultra-high-frequency communications. We need to figure out how to bring it down to a level where the signals can be amplified and heard by ear. Do you know anything about Reginald Fessenden's idea of heterodyning?
Yes, sir. If you mix the signals of two different frequencies together, you get a third frequency, equal to the difference between the first two.
Exactly. And I'm pretty sure that's the first link in the chain. See this, Harry? We've tried every which way to get this circuit built, and now, look at it. A model of simplicity.
You call this simple, Major? This is likely the most complicated circuit anyone's ever thought of, let alone wired up.
Oh, but it is beautifully simple, Harry. First, the receiver picks up the high-frequency wave and heterodynes it against another wave from an oscillating Audion. Second, the intermediate wave is amplified. Third, the regeneration circuit detects the wave and converts it to direct current. Fourth, the wave is sent through a second amplifier to a loudspeaker. 8 tubes in 4 stages. Harry, this opens up the high end to its tone, modulation, everything carried from the beginning of the circuit right on through to the end. Super heterodyne.
To Major Edwin Armstrong, Signal Corps Laboratory, Paris, France, March 9th, 1919. Congratulations on your recent promotion and receipt of the Legion of Honor. Here's one more for you. The first Medal of Honor of the American Institute of Radio Engineers awarded to you for the invention of the regenerative circuit.
In regard to finances, I have considerable trouble in view, and
The situation is considerably complicated over
here. To Major Edwin Armstrong, AEF, Paris, France, August 5th, 1919. Your presence in New York urgently needed. DeForest, pressing action with patent office to overturn regeneration patent.
And, Dates. Mother, I have filed patent papers on this new invention in both France and the U.S., and I expect to have some pretty steep lawyer's bills after
patent office, worst possible venue to try this question. Suggest we file federal court suit against DeForest for infringement of patent 11133149.
Should arrive Yonkers September 29th. Draw positively everything you need from my account. Be sure you do not go short on food, Mother, because that is absolutely the poorest way to economize. Although it does look as if I will soon need every cent I can lay
Westinghouse tenders offer for both regeneration and superheterodyne patents. 335,000 over 10 years. 200,000 more if you beat DeForest in court. Welcome home.
The war is over. Marconi Wireless pools its patents with General Electric to become the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, a move that keeps the entire industry out of government hands. To David Sarnoff, RCA's commercial manager, it seems like the right time to try his notion of a radio music box once again. In June 1920, the RCA board grants him several hundred dollars development money. Sarnoff visits his friend and colleague, Dr. Alfred Goldsmith.
So that's the idea, Doctor. What do you think? Is it feasible? Can you make it?
Well, Dave, maybe you ought to take a look at something over here.
What's that? A phonograph?
No, Dave. Here, let me open the cabinet. You see, it has two knobs. Now, this one...
Wait a minute, Doctor.
Now, this knob is the tuner. And this one is the volume control.
You've already done it.
The loudspeaker is built in, and so are the batteries.
It's the music box. You make a production prototype. How soon?
Oh, of course, Dave. Quickly. Especially if RCA buys Armstrong's superheterodyne circuit. It's sensitive. It requires little or no adjustment. Simple to operate. Mm-hmm. It's quite a piece of work. Oh, by the way, I call this box the Radiola.
AT&T and RCA agree to cross license vacuum to patents.
AT&T grants RCA rights to establish and maintain one-way broadcasting stations.
RCA pays AT&T 1 million shares of stock.
Westinghouse establishes radio station KDKA in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh Department Store announces radio receivers for sale from $10 and up.
Westinghouse establishes radio station WJZ Newark.
Radio station WBZ, East Springfield, Mass.
Station KYW, Chicago.
Westinghouse licenses Armstrong patents to RCA for 1 million shares of stock.
KDKA announces the victory of Warren G. Harding over James M. Cox for the presidency.
Let us know if you're listening.
Say, this is the cat's pajamas. You don't even need to buy a radio set. All you need is a spool of wire, a Quaker Oats box, and a crystal. Wind her up, put an aerial on her, plug in your earphones and listen.
Radio explodes across the U.S. like the foam from a keg of beer split by a T-man's axe. From Pittsburgh's KDKA in 1921, broadcasting grows to 30 stations in 1922 and a whopping 556 in 1923. In 1922, 60,000 homes are plugged into the ether. By the next year, 400,000 families are finding their music, sportscasts, news, sermons, and vaudeville chuckles pouring out of loudspeakers.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. This is Graham McNamee, broadcasting from the Polo Grounds in New York City, where the 1923 World Series
Hello,
is about
ladies.
To get underway.
I'm Mrs.
Wow, it sure is a beautiful day out here, as fans fill the stadium.
Hey! Turn down the radio!
Let us join in praise
to the
with a favorite hymn.
Life's real way to heaven.
Stash is like a
man. Hey! Turn down my radio!
Every effort, we must reach the run. Today's radio verse from the great
and
clever
brain. Jump, Johnny Little Jump, Jump, Frank is always flush. I'm Frank Aslan, and my very best friend is Mary Holland.
Husing? Husing, sir.
Husing.
Yes.
Mr. Husing, I'd like to congratulate you on a nearly perfect audition.
Well, thank you, sir. As I mentioned to you, I've had a little vocal training.
Yes, I can tell that. No fear of the microphone, have you?
Well, sir, it's a little bit of nonsense.
Mr. Husing, I want you to take a look at that large photograph on the studio wall there.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering about
that. That's Mrs. F.J. Edgars, a working man's wife, living in this city, Mr. Husing, with her three adorable babies. Look at her picture. Print it in your mind's eye, sir. Remember, while you are on the air, you are a guest in her home. She is your average listener. Broadcast for her.
Yes, sir.
I'm proud to say that because of that picture, we have never sent an off-color story or song out over the air on this station.
Well,
oh, yes, Mr. Husing, one or two other things. I assume you have a tuxedo.
Tuxedo? Well, naturally,
I... Good. Your hours will be from 9 in the morning when we present the Rise and Shine Physical Culture program until you do a summary of the day's important news dispatches and the station closes at 11:30. Oh. You will wear a black tie from 6 p.m.
But nobody can see me in the studio, can they?
I believe, Mr. Husing, that our listeners deserve our respect.
Yes.
Many of the station's performers appear before the microphone in costume and formal apparel. We will dress for dinner, as our audience does.
Absolutely, sir.
Now then, one last thing. It will be part of your job to make up some of the musical programs, and I must ask you to cooperate in holding down the amount of jazz music. Trouble is, no two of our listeners agree on what jazz is. But what we really want to do here is eliminate the kind of music which is nothing but a riot of noise, where the melody is so trivial as to be practically not there at all.
Oh, yes, sir. You know,
well, of course, such music is a possibility when one is in a dance hall. The surrounding noise helps to overcome the sound of the orchestra. But it is certainly not suitable for broadcasting. Is that clear, Mr. Husing?
Yes, sir, very clear. Doesn't sound like I'll have much time for dancing, anyway.
Oh, Abel, tell me.
Tell you what?
What's the difference between a newspaper and a radio?
What's the difference, Doctor? Ah, so go ahead, I'm listening.
Well, with the radio, you got a sack with garbage coming out.
So?
And with the newspaper, you can make a sack for putting the garbage in.
Ahoy! He's a genius!
Hey! Turn that radio off!
Major Armstrong! Look down at the camera! That's great, sir! Are you okay up there?
I'm fine! Never felt better! Take your time now! I want a great shot.
Okay. Oh, hold it. Got it. Did you ever see anything like that?
The readers are going to love this, Mac. It's front page stuff. Major Edwin H. Armstrong, the man who found the radio telephone talking like a hair-lipped man and left it singing like a nightingale, does a handstand 21 stories above Fifth Avenue.
That's a great open, Betty. Okay, Major, relax for a minute. I have to reload the camera. Who's he trying to impress?
Just between you, me, and the lamppost, Mac, I think he's thumbing his nose at RCA. Well, that's the Radio Central Transmitting, or what's it he's standing on up there? And he's the biggest stockholder in the company.
Gee, I thought he was just some inventor. Okay, Major. I wonder, can you let go with your hands for a second? Great! I got it!
You can come down now, Major. Yeah, some inventor, sure. He sold his invention, something called super regeneration, to RCA for $200,000 and 60,000 shares.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a cool half million, Mac.
Tell me about it.
So he wants to hang by his heels from the company's tower? Say, I'll tell the world.
Magnificent. I hope you got that, Mr. McIntosh.
I sure did. Get him developed. You'll have prints in the morning.
Great.
Tell me one thing, though.
Of course.
That was a damn fool thing to do up there. Why?
Because, Mr. McIntosh, the spirit moved me.
Say, can I use that, Major?
I don't see any reason why not, Miss Russell. I've always loved high places, the feeling of wind on my face. Over in France, when I was working on radios for Army airplanes, they took me flying over the trenches in those spindly things. Oh, it's thrilling. Mostly, I'm a very quiet person, you know. I spend my time in the laboratory.
And in court. Your patent suit with Dr. DeForest has been going on for several years, hasn't it?
Since I returned from the war, yes, one way or another.
Will you win?
Well, it's a complicated matter, Miss Russell. DeForest claims he invented regeneration some weeks before my patent was issued. That's absurd. His proof is that he made a howling noise. We call that audio feedback. It's the same kind of noise you might get from a faulty loudspeaker. It has nothing to do with high-frequency oscillation. Judge Mayer decided in my favor. The Court of Appeals did so as well. I believe DeForest is unprincipled.
Strong language, Major.
Ray's tried to steal my patent. But what makes me so angry is that he never even understood what regeneration was until he read my patent, and then he misunderstood it. I'm suing him for court costs, and I'm suing to keep him from using a cheap trick to manufacture any device based on patent number 1113149. Now, you must excuse me. I have an appointment with a beautiful redhead.
Oh, so long, Major. Hey, good luck. Hey, Mac, you don't have to lug that tripod. Here, let me carry it. Oh,
thanks, Betty. Sure. Wow, he's a peach.
Jane that lands him gets a blue ribbon, and that's no baloney. Well, come on, Mac. We still have that crossword puzzle tournament to cover.
Oh, boy.
Marion.
Yes, Mr. Sarnoff?
Come in here and close the door, please, Marion. Did that idiot send you a print of his handstand, too?
Yes. Yes, he did. Sometimes he's so reckless.
Reckless? This has got to stop, Marion. He's doing these stunts on your account. All right, I want you to take a letter, please.
Yes, sir.
To Major E.H. Armstrong. You know the address. If you've made up your mind that this mundane universe of ours is not a suitable place for you to be spending your time in, I don't want to quarrel with your decision. But keep away from the Aeolian Hall Towers or any other property of the Radio Corporation. I don't want you to take this letter as a joke because I am perfectly serious about it. And if I catch anybody in our organization allowing you to pull off such foolish tricks as those exhibited by these photographs, I'm going to talk to them even more severely than I am to you in this letter. Well, what do you think, Marion? Will it do any good?
I don't know. I never know what he'll do next, Mr. Sarnoff. Slow down, Howard. I mean it. Slow down.
What's the use of having an Hispano Suiza if you don't open it up once in a while? We're only doing 85. What did Dave say? Minnie, come on. What did Dave say when he read my note?
Howard, he told you never to go up there again.
I had to do it, Minnie. And anyway, I didn't get his letter until the day after. It was a kind of, I don't know, a christening. It was absolutely essential.
It was essential to try and kill yourself?
Don't worry, Minnie. I wouldn't give RCA the publicity. Anyway, I've got a big reason not to leave this world of ours, as Dave said, and you're
her. Please, Howard.
Marry me, Minnie.
Slow down, Howard.
Is it that dentist? Minnie, for God's sake, a dentist?
No, I don't know.
Hang on, Minnie. I think I can get 100 out of this crate.
Oh, Howard. Howard.
So, Dave, I hope you will accept this snapshot, framed and ready to hang on your vice presidential office wall, where it will reflect to you some of the Armstrong luck, which is proverbial and unending. By the way, you will need a new secretary after December 1st. Naturally, you and Lizette are invited to our wedding. Well, maybe Marion will keep him on the ground anyway.
Every second he gets bold, and now he's leaning on my shoulder, Ma. He's kissing me.
That was fine, Eddie.
Wah, wah, wah! I was sure you'd pick up my stomach rumbling on the table, eh?
I wish film sound was that sensitive, Eddie, but we're working on it. Time for lunch, everybody.
Lunch!
I brought in some delicatessen for us, Eddie.
Just like home.
Lunch, everybody.
How's the show going?
Well, I'll tell you this, Lee. You can't buy a ticket. You have to inherit them.
Wait for me.
We're on our way to 500 performances, I think.
Oh.
I see. Say, I hear you're shooting Jessel. Don't miss.
I'm also doing Frank McLean as Abraham Lincoln. And I'm going to the White House next month to record Mr. Coolidge on film. Phonofilm will present statements by all three candidates before the election.
Lee, do you still keep in touch with radio?
Honestly, I must tell you, Eddie, this phonofilm work is so much more interesting to me. So much more artistic. I doubt if I can ever become engrossed in radio again. Except, of course, finally to prove that I'm its father.
Father of radio. All I can manage is girls. But I mean the programs. I've done a few radio guest spots, you know. It seems to have a terrific potential for comedy. Friends in Chicago tell me about a couple of boys. Singers named Carell and Gosden. They do a blackface double called Sam and Henry. Folks are cuckoo about them.
Oh. Well, I hear the concert music mostly. I've always believed that radio could have such an effective uplift on the masses, be such a powerful educator. And yet, there's more and more drift towards selling soap flakes and cough drops. I'm sure, though, that you could bring a great deal of heart to it if you wanted.
Heart, yes. There's room in radio for real drama as well as simple laughter.
Real drama, Eddie? The real drama of radio has been my life. And someday the story will be told. Someday.
From our studios, a program of popular classics for the Wurlitzer, played by Percy Duff, organist at Grauman's Egyptian Theater in Hollywood. This is KHJ Los Angeles. I've just been handed an important news bulletin. Valentino is dead. Rudolph Valentino, celebrated star of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and the just-released Son of the Sheik, is dead at 31. And thousands of mourners are gathering outside the...
Lab, who's calling? Just a minute. Major, it's your lawyer, Bill Davis. Says it's urgent.
Thanks, Harry. Hello, Bill. What can I...
This is a joke. I can't believe this.
What do we do now?
They did what?
And Sarnoff okayed it? Oh, this stinks. Oh, this really stinks. Well, I suppose so. Lunch. You don't really expect me to eat, do you, Bill? Right, see you then.
What is it, Major? It must be bad.
Couldn't be much worse. The federal court judges overruled the commissioner of patents. They gave regeneration to DeForest.
How could they? You've won every case, every decision.
Bill said it had nothing to do with the merits of the controversy. Just one word. One damn word. That despicable swine got them to accept electrical in place of high frequency. He took his miserable tube, which he didn't even understand, threw together some wires in a no-good circuit, which wouldn't ever work in a radio, and made it produce electrical oscillations. Don't those idiot judges know the difference between electrical and high frequency?
What's Davis going to do?
Oh, no, wait, that's not the end of it. DeForest's got RCA and AT&T with him to sue me out of my original patent on the grounds that it conflicts with this phony electrical one.
These judges don't know much about electrical engineering.
They only know about the law.
I know. It's the things people know.
It's the things people know that ain't so exactly. Judges know words. They know all about words, not right and wrong, not justice. Huh. I'll show them. Here's what I'll do, Harry. I'll get a detective out in San Francisco to poke around at Federal.
That's where DeForest was working?
Yeah, when he claims he got feedback, sure. Maybe the original models are around the plant someplace. We'll get a hold of them, present them in court, stick some electrical oscillation in the judge's ear. That ought to clean the wax out.
Yes, surely the most glamorous event ever to take place on the Great White Way, as the gala premiere of the new Vitaphone sound picture has all New York gaga with anticipation. John Barrymore and Mary Astor, the stars of Don Juan, are expected shortly, and many notables have already arrived at the Warner's Theater, including director Alan Crosslin. Advance reviews proclaim Vitaphone a marvelous device and tell us that the timing of the sound to the movement of the lips of singers and the actions of musicians is almost uncanny. And here comes the beautiful white Rolls-Royce limousine with John Barrymore.
The timing of the sound, the movement of the lips, is almost uncanny.
Vitaphone. It's nothing but a gramophone record. Don Juan has recorded music, that's all. Phonofilm is sound on the film itself. Talking pictures. What the hell's the matter with people anyway, Charlie? I gave them talking pictures 3 years ago. I gave them Polar Negri. I gave them Eddie Cantor.
Lee, calm down. You aren't ruined. Fox paid you a lot of money.
Which is gone. The Attorney General wants to know why my salesman used that footage of Coolidge to sell DeForest Company stock. Why not? I shot it, didn't I?
You've got your radio patents.
Oh, that pesky thief Armstrong. Oh, I showed him. The Supreme Court showed him. What joy. What joy to see him lose what he never should have had. Yes, I have the oscillating Orion, but it's phonofilms I'm worried about. Phonofilm is the future. This Vitaphone stuff is already old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned? You bet your radio is old-fashioned if you're not listening to a brand-new 1927 Crosley Pup. Remember just a few years ago when a one-tube model sold for $80 or $90? Today, Crosley makes a better one than ever for just $9.75. See and hear the new Crosley sets at your local Crosley dealer. And do it before this Saturday's magnificent celebration of Lucky Lindy's triumphant return to America. Lindbergh and Crosley. Two names that mean all American quality.
This is Graham McNamee speaking to you from our nation's capital, where upwards of 150,000 cheering Americans are gathered to hear President Coolidge award the Distinguished Flying Cross to the handsome young aviator, Charles Lindbergh. This is the largest network broadcast in the history of radio, linking 50 stations in 24 states, coast to coast, over 12,000 miles of telephone wire. NBC estimates today's audience to be at least 30 million people from New York City to Seattle, Washington. And here comes the motorcade up Pennsylvania Avenue. Here's the boy himself. Here's Lindy. There's a little droop to his shoulders. He's very serious. Tired out. And awfully nice.
Why don't you listen, Andy?
Andy, is you gonna shut up or is I gonna kick you out the courtroom? The more you talk, the worse off I is.
Now, Brown, you can occasionally use the expression, I don't remember. Don't make it noticeable, but occasionally say, I don't remember. Uh-huh. Now, don't forget that. Now, what are you going to say?
Now, don't forget that.
No,
what are you
no.
doing out
you
there?
You don't remember.
No,
can you hear the
right.
show?
Can I hear it?
No, no.
Come
I
outside a minute,
remember.
Minnie.
You don't
what do you want?
What?
No, no.
This
Andy,
is amazing. Turn off the radio.
Remember.
Come out on the porch.
Who is my lawyer?
Turn it off?
Yes,
now,
please.
Brown, just
Minnie.
Say, I
all
don't
right.
remember.
What could be so important?
Shh. Listen.
Amos and Andy.
Yes, it's on everywhere. It's on every radio in the neighborhood. Isn't it amazing, sweetheart? Everybody's listening to the radio. They're all hearing the same thing.
When people around here say the radio, they don't mean a cabinet, an electrical phenomenon, or a man in a studio. They refer to a pervading and somewhat godlike presence which has come into their lives and homes.
Radio? Sure, it's got an audience. Monks in monasteries. Taxis and traffic jams. Solitary lightships tossing on stormy seas. Trappers, snowbound in winter. Baseball fans. College presidents, babes in arms, and bedridden veterans.
Surveys.
Sets in use.
Ratings.
Proof of sale.
Historically, the facts about radio are distressingly simple. Because the programs were there, people listened. Because they listened, the programs were there.
Ratings.
Say, folks, if you all out there like this program, me and Andy hope that you let our sponsor know. Just ask for Pepsodent mouthwash next time you go shopping at your friendly neighborhood store.
I was going to use some right now.
Say, have you got some of that mouthwash they talk about on Amos and Andy?
Pepsodent mouthwash, please.
Yes, I'll have a bottle, too.
Me, too.
Yes, and me.
Well, is that your last bottle of Pepsodent?
How can that be your last bottle?
Come on. When are you going to get some more?
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Yes, it's on order. Sorry. Listen, can't somebody ask those boys to stop talking about this stuff? I can't keep a bottle on the shelf.
Radio is in the grip of uncouth sandwich men. From the ecstasies of Beethoven and Tchaikovsky, listeners are suddenly dumped into a cold mess of ginger ale and cigarettes. Why should anyone even want to buy a radio when nine-tenths of what one can hear is the continual drivel of second-rate jazz, sickening crooning by degenerate sax players, interlaced with blatant sales talk and impudent demands to buy or try.
That, according to Dr. Lee DeForest, inventor of the tube and self-proclaimed father of radio, is the situation as of 1930. DeForest has long since abdicated the ether for other media, talking pictures, a primitive kind of television. He even dabbles in diathermy. Major Howard Armstrong, wealthy inventor, is too busy in the laboratory to listen to the radio he helped perfect. Too busy to change his shirt, so some people say. And David Sarnoff, the former Marconi office boy, becomes president in 1930. And 3 years later, he sits in a corner office on the 53rd floor of the brand new 70-story RCA building, a great Art Deco skyscraper towering over Rockefeller Center in the worst year of the Depression.
Ah, come in. Just doing my executive duty, signing a few things. We'll leave immediately. Look around the office.
Thanks, Dave. This is beautiful. This is just beautiful. Boy, you've done well. And you certainly look like a tycoon.
I'm hardly a tycoon, Howard. John D.'s a tycoon. Chrysler's a tycoon. Major Armstrong's a tycoon.
No, Major Armstrong is just a middle-aged inventor.
Listen, Howard, people tell me you sold RCA before the crash. You've got royalties pouring in. You're in the money. How's Marion?
This is fine. Fine. She's spending the holidays in Palm Beach. I've been much too busy for her, I'm afraid. Boy, you got a swell view, Dave. I can damn well see my old wireless antenna in Yonkers.
Well, Howard, I'm all done here.
Oh, good. My car's downstairs in front of that big sculpture of God they put up over those cathedral doors.
That's not God, Howard. It's genius. The genius of cosmic laws. Howard, what is all this stuff? I thought you were going to show me a little black box and knock out the static you ate so much.
It's not quite a box. This is my lab, you know, David. I'm working on a couple of things.
You got enough tubes in here to light up Times Square.
More in the next room. This thing is a transmitter and a receiver, both.
Do you need all this to get rid of some static? I was hoping to see something we could sell as a piece of add-on equipment.
Dave, it can't be done. I've tried every which way, and the mathematicians, bless them, are right. You can't do it. What you can do is what I've done here. I've already got 5 basic patents on file. The whole way radio is transmitted now is bound for the scrap heap.
Oh, I'm not sure. I'd like to hear that, Howard. RCA's in the business of making radio sets. Not revolutions.
That's right. This is a revolution, but it's clean. It's beautiful. Music sounds like the orchestra is in the room with you instead of on a scratchy old record. Voices, men and women, both have got some character to them. The set doesn't hum at you when you turn it on.
You know, I just remembered. It's almost 20 years to the day I came up here to listen to your regeneration circuit, January 1914.
I'm glad you think it's my circuit, Dave. The Supreme Court decided that SOB stock promoter pulled it out of his coat pocket, all wired up, ready to broadcast the Metropolitan Opera.
Howard, I'm sorry about the court decision. You know I'm personally sorry about RCA's part and all that.
Dave, the Supreme Court was deliberately misled into a terrible scientific error by lawyers representing RCA. Your lawyers...
Howard, I can't argue this thing.
I am the inventor of the regenerative circuit.
You have the DeForest patents to protect, you know...
I don't want to have a situation... situation develop which makes it impossible for me to cooperate
right,
with
Howard,
you.
Howard, you remember how we sat in that lousy freezing little cabin on the Jersey shore? Listen to that magic box of yours. It was the first time I'd ever heard signals from all over the world. Clifton, San Francisco, Portland, Honolulu. We listened for 13 hours straight, 20 years ago, Howard. So 20 years later, what have you got for me?
Wideband frequency modulation.
Frequency?
Sure. You're surprised. David, this is going to mean a whole new broadcasting game. Sit down, light a cigar, listen.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North American, all the ships at sea, let's go to press. Flash! No Mary Mother May for Texas outlaw Clyde Barrow and his gun girl chum Bunny Parker. These two 10 most wanted of 1934 gunned down by local coppers on a backcountry Louisiana road today before they had a chance to pull another trigger. Banks that still have bucks, get breathe easy. Flash, June 14th, Chancellor Adolf Hitler, head German Ratsky, met with Italian Primo Mussolini for the first time today. Oh, I wonder what they did with their hands. Flash, Bat Bandito John Dillinger blasted by G-Man today, July 22nd, outside of Moon Picture Palace in the Windy City. Flash, orchestra band Bernie and his lads at the Rainbow Room. WW Wubs, they're whippling with them. I'll be back in a flash with the flash.
Thanks for asking us up here, Howard.
Oh, sure.
Great to get away from the city. Not counting my little excursion out to Haddonfield, New Jersey.
The future of radio laid out on Harry Satanwater's cocktail bar like a corpse on a mortuary slab.
Now that Prohibition's repealed, Major, I think Harry will want to get all those circuit boards off that cocktail bar. Every engineer at RCA has been out to look at it, poke it, and listen to FM bring in signals from 80 miles away.
It's been a hell of a year so far.
It was rotten, Major. Chief Justice, no Justice Cardozo would know an arc from an amp. You've still got almost every engineer in the business behind you. DeForest never knew what he had inside that tube until you showed it.
Water under the bridge now, after 22 years.
You're the only man the Institute ever gave a gold medal to twice.
Yeah, I meant to give it back. I had the speech already.
They were right not to let you, and that's water under the bridge, too. You've done something now that no one else can claim.
What's taking RCA so long, Harry? Frequency modulation works. It works in ways I never thought it would.
They don't know what to make of it, Howard.
They've been testing it all summer.
I hear they're sending Walter Baker out from Camden to fiddle with it.
He's the best they've got. I'll tell you what I think, Harry. I think Sarnoff is throwing money at working for television. Sarnoff said to me, "Why are you pushing this so hard? Why am I pushing it? It's what radio was meant to be." But he wants pictures. The corporation wants to sell picture boxes. They're going to push. Listen.
Grace said she thought we might have a thunder shower.
With my system, there'd be no atmospherics, Harry. That music, corny as it is, would come through loud and clear. When are they going to see that, Harry? When? And lights, please. Thank you. Now, gentlemen, I know that a sound film of a radio broadcast is hardly convincing proof, but it was the only way we could show you how interference by lightning is virtually eliminated using the frequency modulation system. Now then, suppose we have a little demonstration right here in the hall. George, would you open the curtain and turn on the receiver, please?
Right, Caps.